I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
A problem here. We have a hijacked aircraft headed towards New York, and we need you guys to, we need someone to scramble some F-16s or something up there to help us out.
Is this real world or exercise?
No, this is not an exercise, not a test.
A lot of smoke in lower Manhattan.
Another one just hit the building.
Wow.
Another one hit it hard.
Another one just hit the World Trade.
The whole building just came apart.
Oh, my God. Minnesota Star, I have an active air defense scramble F-15s climbing to flight level 2900.
All aircraft on the ground for a national emergency.
The region commander has declared that we can shoot down aircraft that do not respond to our direction. Copy that? You read that from the vice president, right? Vice president has cleared.
United 93, have you got information on that yet?
Yeah, he's down.
He's down?
Yes.
When did he land? Because we had confirmation.
He did not land.
Oh, he's down?
Yes,
down?
Somewhere up northeast of Camp David.
That would have been the Pennsylvania area, where the passengers revolted against the hijackers trying to take control of the plane and causing it to go down, either they did or the hijackers did, into a farm field where now there's a national memorial. But the destination was probably going to be D.C., either another attack on the Pentagon or more likely the White House or Capitol. 9/11, four coordinated Islamic suicide terrorist attacks carried out by al-Qaeda on that Tuesday morning after 19 terrorists hijacked four different commercial airliners scheduled to travel from New England, mid-Atlantic region of the East Coast to California. Two of the planes crashing into the Twin Towers, and then, of course, another, as we said, hit the Pentagon, and then the fourth going down in that rural Pennsylvania area. This is 9/11, September 11, 2023. Glad to have you with us. This is the second hour of two of Larry Connors USA. If you missed the first hour, you will definitely want to pull it up either as a podcast, video, and or audio when we post it later, because it also focuses on 9/11 and some things which we will not be touching on in this sequence. And an interview with Marine Lieutenant Colonel retired Dakota Wood and his thoughts on that day. And the conspiracy theory that some continue to push, claiming there were no planes, it was all plots of a conspiracy by our government, and bombs were preset to go off using a plane crashing into the tower. They never should have come down like that. You'll want to hear that interview. And I remind you, of course, when we're on, we are streaming at News Talk STL Facebook and Twitter, Larry Connors USA Facebook and Twitter, and on Rumble. So where were you that morning? I'm sure you remember. You remember distinctly what you were doing and how you heard about it and your first reaction then. St. Louis residents might recall that there was to be a World Golf Association tournament in St. Louis. In fact, Tiger Woods was already in town, and several of the other pros had arrived the day before. Tiger Woods was putting on an exhibition, and I got a couple of tickets for a nephew of mine who was in town, and we're sitting maybe 20 feet from Tiger, watching him take different clubs, hit them different links, and just talk about the game. I had tickets for us to attend the event the next day. And, of course, the next day was 9/11. And a lot of those who had come in from all over the world, not just the U.S. And they'd come in either on commercial flights, or if they could, they had their own private planes. But all air traffic was cleared from the skies for a period of time. And when air traffic did resume, how many of you, be honest, how many of you every time you looked up and saw a plane, you maybe began to shudder a little bit and wonder, where is it going? And how many did not want to fly because of that for a long time, and maybe still? But in the beginning, when the reports were coming out, you can imagine it was chaotic.
It does not appear that there's any kind of an effort up there yet. Now remember, oh my God.
Oh my God.
That looks like a second plane.
Oh my God, another plane has just hit. It hit another building, going right into the middle of it. Explosion. My God, it's right in the middle of the building.
Black smoke has been pouring out of huge holes in the upper portions of the building.
Oh my word. Oh my word. I'm sorry I screamed. That's on purpose, Alfred. Somebody is doing this on purpose.
Yes, they were. When the first one hit, everybody was wondering what kind of accident. What went wrong with the plane that they flew right into the tower? It's on the approach path to Newark Airport, and LaGuardia, I should say, either one, but not at that level, obviously, not over New York City, not over the tallest buildings in New York City. So something had to go wrong. And then when the second one hits, you realize it's not an accident at all. Those flights were destined, as I said, to the West Coast out of the East. And on one particular flight, there was a young woman, a flight attendant, who had signed on to take this particular flight because she was then going to go from California on to meet her sister for a trip in Hawaii. Otherwise, she wouldn't have been on board. But she signed up that day to be on that flight, United Flight 11. American Flight 11, I should say. It departed Logan Airport at 7:59 Eastern Time en route to L.A. She was a crew of 11 and 75 passengers, not including the hijackers. And that plane was the one that hit the North Tower of the World Trade Center, 8:46 a.m. Eastern Time. Betty Ong was her name. She began to realize things were going on and what was happening, and then she saw evidence. So she went to the back of the plane and started making calls to their central command.
American Airlines emergency line, please state your emergency.
Hey, this is Nitty at American Airlines calling. I am monitoring a call in which Flight 11, the flight attendant is advising our reps that the pilot, everyone's been stabbed.
The moment terrorists took over the flight deck, Betty Ong picked up the airphone and dialed American Airlines reservations. Her call was routed to the Raleigh, North Carolina call center. Her calm voice described what was happening on board that plane.
Okay, my name is Betty Ong. I'm number 3 on flight 11.
Our number 1 has been stabbed and our 5 has been stabbed.
Can anybody get up to the cockpit?
She passed all the information along, and then they knew the plane was hijacked.
Hi, Joe Cooper, Boston Center. We have a hijacked aircraft headed towards the New York metro area. He is a 767 departed Boston going to LAX.
From her jump seat in the back of the plane, Betty Ong relayed invaluable information about the men who strong-armed their way onto the flight deck after murdering 2 flight attendants.
She was the one connection let them know for sure what was going on. You heard in the opening soundbite, we have authority direct from the White House to shoot down any commercial plane that will not respond to our directions. That would have been a horrific event if we had come to that, but it was going to be carried out, and it had to be carried out. because if the pilots were not responding and not following the instructions, they might be headed for another target. And then we have those who rushed to the scene to help, firefighters. Some were just down the street. In fact, a French crew was following them around just doing a documentary. And they actually got the picture of the first plane flying overhead. It made so much noise, the photographer automatically raised his camera and saw it crash right into the building, just blocks down the street from them. That was the first fire crew to arrive. Then more and more began to come. And then police officers began to come in and direct traffic and also go inside and try to get people out, carrying stuff up to where they could get to the fire, going up the stairwells. We had, on the actual date of 9/11, 341 New York City firefighters, paramedics, and civilian support staff. I'm sorry, that just includes the firefighters. 343, let me correct the number, who died during the actual attack. 343 who died that day or within hours of the attack. They're running into a building that's on fire and been hit by planes. Others are people are trying to get out. But their mission is to go in and save as many as they can. And cancer is still claiming lives of some of them. That first number I gave you, 341, those are the first responders who died from 9/11 related illnesses. They now almost equal the number of firefighters, 343, that died on that day. They died because of inhaling the smoke, the toxic fumes. Yeah, various cancers have been created. One of them died earlier this year after a long battle with lung cancer. He was on Ground Zero September 11, continued working day in and day out. And his brother was also a firefighter. And he did help recover his brother's body from Ground Zero and stayed to help bring out more. So cancer is still claiming lives even now. That day, everything was chaos. Air traffic controllers constantly trying to get a handle on the events.
Hey, can you look out your window right now?
Yeah.
Can you see a guy about 4,000 feet, about 5 east of your airport right now? Looks like he's...
Yeah, I see him.
You see a guy, look, is he descending through the building also?
He's descending really quick too, yeah.
Well, that's...
2,500 feet now. He just dropped 800 feet in like one sweep.
That's another situation. What kind of airplane is that? Can you guys tell?
I don't know. I'll read it out in a minute. Another one just hit the building.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Another one just hit the war site.
The whole building just came apart.
Oh my God. Holy smokes.
Those inside the towers may have seen the planes coming or not. The first tower, imagine you're on an upper floor where the plane is not hit, or a lower floor, and you might be looking out and you see a plane coming, it just keeps coming and coming. And maybe you're frozen with fear, maybe you're not, but you know it's not right. And then there were those in the other tower, the South Tower, who were witnessing what had happened in the North Tower. And they were going to evacuate, but they were being told by Port Authority, you're fine here, this building's going to be fine. Well, that was before the other plane struck. One woman talks about her husband who was on one of the upper floors making a final call to her, one of two.
The first call was when I heard on the radio in my car that the World Trade Center had been struck by a commercial aircraft. So I was able to get home quickly, called Frank. He picked up, we spoke, and the first thing he said to me, he said, if you think we got rocked in 93, he said this was 10 times worse. He said, Kimmy, I got thrown from my chair to the floor. He said, several of my colleagues are over at the window watching people jump to their death. He says, I can't go to the windows. I'm like, Frank, you need to get out of there. I'm like, go get a coffee, go down. I said, if it's safe, you can come back. But as I was speaking with him, he was a little bit distracted, and I could hear the voice, the intercom in the background from the Port Authority. And it was saying very clearly, World Trade 2 is secure, and everyone in World Trade 2 is to remain in their offices. And Frank said, did you hear that? I said, I did. I said, I still want you to leave. I said, best case scenario, your windows are going to shatter. He said, Kimmy, you need to call my mom. Tell her that I'm okay. Call your mom, and I'll talk to you soon. He says, just call them and tell them it's not my tower and I'm okay. So I hung up the phone, and as I was calling his mom and my mom, I have a girlfriend who called me on call waiting, and she said, Kimmy, are you watching the TV? And I said, no. And she's like, Frank's tower was just hit.
So no sooner did she finish the conversation with him than his tower got hit. She got a second call.
He called me at 9:22 a.m., and he said, you need to listen carefully, sweetie. He says, I've gone up to the rooftop, and the rooftop doors are locked. He said, there's several of us. We're on the 87th floor, and we're trapped, and it's getting difficult to breathe. And I could hear a lot of movement, a lot of commotion. I could hear glass breaking in the background. I assumed it was for a fire extinguisher or something. And Frank said, I know you know this, but I need to tell you. Promise me you tell Zoe and Garrett every day for the rest of their lives how much their papa loves them. He says, but right now I need your help. You need to call 911. You need to tell them that we're trapped on the 87th floor and there's a lot of us here. So he hung up the phone, and that's the last time that we spoke.
One of his two children was only 2 years old at the time. His wife had some final remarks.
I love the fact that his last call to me was very calm, very brave. I mean, I didn't even realize he was saying goodbye until the building had collapsed, you know, 35 minutes later. I mean, he was so courageous for me, and I was able to call 911 and, you know, explain where they were. And I still had hope, and I'm like, you know, if anyone can get out of this building, it's Frank. So I wouldn't say it haunts me. I feel blessed that I got that call and that he got to tell me and the kids how much he loved us and that he was trying to get out up until the very last second.
Until the very last second. And when the building started coming down, there was no escape at that point. Just over the weekend, word was released by the chief medical examiner's office in New York City saying they've now identified a man and a woman. This would be the 1,648th and 1,649th victims to be identified. There are still believed to be a number equal that they have not been able to identify. They're using more advanced DNA techniques than ever before. And, of course, names are only being released if the family wants them to. But despite all the advancements in DNA technology, and just identifying two more over the weekend, or word coming out, still roughly 40% of those believed inside. In other words, about 40% of 1,100 remain unidentified. I mean, that would be the 40%, 1,100 out of 2,700 who were reported missing, still not identified, cannot be reunited with family. Coming up, New York City mayor being accused of being a black version of Trump. You want to hear that? Lock and load, ready on the right. I want to share something special with you. I've told you how Wellington Environmental works to keep hospitals, schools, businesses safe for their patients, students, clients, employees. Wellington can do the same for you. Perfect example. A relative went to the basement, almost knocked over by the smell. A sewer line had broken. A call to Wellington, a crew was dispatched. First thing, make the home safe. Then clean up the mess. Truly clean it up. Now, I'm telling you this because I want the best for you. Wellington Environmental. Here's the number, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau, 644-4930. Wellington Environmental, your world, cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington. If you like premium cigars and whiskey, I've got the perfect place. Lit Cigar Lounge, now open in its new space in the district, just off Highway 40 in Chesterfield. Lit Cigars for anyone who enjoys great cigars, whiskey, bourbon, tequila. Ladies, that includes you. Leather seating, numerous big screen TVs, special events featuring live music and tastings. More details at litstl.com. litstl.com. Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Let me tell you something, New Yorkers. Never in my life have I had a problem that I did not see an ending to. I don't see an ending to this. I don't see an ending to this. This issue will destroy New York City. Destroy New York City. We're getting 10,000 migrants a month. One time we were just in Venezuela. Now we're getting Ecuador. Now we're getting Russian speaking coming through Mexico. Now we're getting Western Africa. Now we're getting people from all over the globe have made their minds up that they're going to come through the southern part of the border and come into New York City.
That is New York City Mayor Adams last week. The reason we're playing it again is because now some progressives are attacking the black mayor. Now, you should know this in case you were not aware of it. He had at one time been a Republican, and of course he has been a police captain. And for that, those remarks he was making at an event last week, a writer for the Joy Reid Report, the readout, put out on his blog, and he's not the only one picking it up. Others have joined in on Twitter and so forth, saying Eric Adams is channeling Trump in a diatribe about migrants in New York City. He said that showing a side of it then helps explain how he has earned previously the Black Trump moniker. And again, this is a writer for Joy Reid on her readout program. Jahan Jones, I assume that's correct pronunciation. I'm trying to say it correctly. He's also a multimedia producer focused on culture and politics. But he goes on to say that Eric Adams has often been labeled the Black Trump anyway. And when he made his remarks at a town hall on New York City's Upper West Side, he criticized Texas Governor Abbott, a Republican, for the stunt of sending migrants from Texas to New York. But then he had particularly harsh words for the migrants themselves, saying they were going to destroy the city, as you just heard. And, of course, he pointed out we're getting 10,000 a month. Now, keep in mind, 10,000 a month? Well, they're not all being bussed there by Abbott. But he's also blaming Abbott for the issue at the border. That obviously is not where the problem is. And we have, by minimum estimates, 2.5 million illegals into the country since Biden took office. And many place the number much higher, 6, 8, 9+ million. That's not counting the getaways. And then he talked about the impact that is going to happen, not only just for New York City, but every borough around New York City.
And everyone is saying it's New York City's problem. Every community in this city is going to be impacted. We have a $12 billion deficit that we're going to have to cut. Every service in this city is going to be impacted. All of us. And so I say to you, as I turn it over to you, This is some of the most educated, some of the most knowledgeable, probably more of my commissioners and deputy commissioners and chiefs live in this community. So as you asked me a question about migrants, tell me what role you played. How many of you organized to stop what they're doing to us? How many of you were part of the movement to say, we're seeing what this mayor is trying to do, and they're destroying New York City? It's going to come to your neighborhoods. All of us are going to be impacted by this.
Now, when he says what they're doing to us, he's talking about the migrants and or the administration, the Biden administration. No, the migrants. But the writer that was going, calling him apart or tearing him apart and claiming that he's channeling Trump, added that there's a reason Eric Adams' rant is being applauded by conservatives, because they make a habit of spreading anti-immigrant propaganda. I don't. I'm not against immigrants. I'm against illegal immigrants. That's my issue. And that, I think, that is majority opinion of like minds, I should say. Maybe obviously not all, and one would be Congresswoman AOC in New York. And she said, once again, if we want to reduce the number of asylum seekers in general, well, they're not coming for asylum in many cases. They just want a better life, which I understand. But they're coming under false pretense, and they're coming in illegally. She says, we have to make U.S. foreign policy all part of this conversation, and the White House could extend temporary protected status to the migrants. Again, they want to call them migrants, not illegals. So the writer for this piece said, I want to share her critique of the policy agenda of Mayor Adams and his rhetoric. He said, who gets to declare and with what authority what is truly destroying New York City? Is it the finger-wagging mayor who appears to be returning the city to discriminatory surveillance and police state reminiscent of New York in the 1990s, or is it the immigrants being demonized for pursuing a promise literally inscribed near New York's shore? I'll go with the latter. Yes, of the Statue of Liberty, say we do welcome the huddled masses. But that's legally. And everyone at that time was coming through Ellis Island, being processed, documented. But that's the route they want to take, and it's not doing anything but dividing themselves again. I need to share this with you, and part of it involves me personally. And I would not do it, except I've had some questions about it. And lately I have developed an eye issue. And the only reason I'm sharing is because two things. One, the FDA is now approving some new COVID shots. The CDC is going to meet tomorrow to consider the guidelines for the fall and winter, reference COVID, flu, and RSV issues, respiratory illnesses. But scientists from New Zealand are reporting they have uncovered the first case of a rare eye disease that has been linked to both the COVID-19 vaccine and the virus itself. So you need to make sure you hear me clearly. It's not just the vaccine, but maybe the virus. And in their study, the Journal of Ophthalmic Inflammation and Infection, they found a 28-year-old otherwise healthy patient was diagnosed with multiple white dot syndrome, complaining of problems just 2 days after getting her second dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. Her symptoms merit what I've been going through for some time, dark blind spots, phantom light flashes, overall decreased vision. Now, I've had that for some time off and on, and I was told it was age-related. This before COVID when I started having it. So I'm not trying to make a direct correlation. I'm just trying to point some things out to you. So I've already had that, and that was basically where the gel of the eye, as you get older, begins to shrink, and it may lead to a torn retina, or it might involve light flashes that wouldn't be there earlier, or what they call pepper dots in front of you, or sometimes a spider web across your eye. But I did take note of this. In addition to what she's going through, They're all specific to her right eye. And they discovered the vision in her right eye went from 2020 to 2050. That's pretty close to what my right eye has done. I have the lower bottom of my right eye, I don't have vision. In other words, if you're sitting across from me, I close my left eye and I look at you just my right eye, I basically see from your nose up. Now, I'm scheduled to have some surgery and they're going to check on it and possibly replace the lens anyway because it's cloudy at a certain age. You begin to worry about that concern. But I don't know really if it has anything to do with the vaccine or the virus or just age-related. This was a 26-year-old woman, 28-year-old. That's a little difference between our ages, a little. Considerable, let's put it that way. So my symptoms and whatever I'm having could be more age-related. But the reason I'm sharing this with you, if you have had some vision issues since getting a COVID vaccine, I strongly suggest you contact your ophthalmologist and get a full checkup. They say that after 3 months and without treatment, the vision in her right eye returned to normal and everything else subsided. But a year later, they began to come back again. And they emerged after she tested positive for COVID. So she had the symptoms 2 days after getting the vaccine, lasted about 3 months without full treatment. It went back to normal. A year later, she tests positive for COVID, and she's having the same white dot issue as they're describing it. And they say again, no treatment needed, symptoms resolved after 9 months. So it's not necessarily similar to my situation, but I want to bring that to your attention. If you are having any vision issues after having vaccine or COVID, and again, I'm not telling you what you should or should not do. You make that determination for you and your family by consulting with your doctors, experts, not me. Coming up, the New Mexico governor who wants to ban guns, basically strip the Second Amendment. And you'd be interested in somebody who's complaining. Allen Outdoor Solutions knows what you want. An oasis, a place at your home to relax, enjoy, entertain. Allen Outdoor Solutions can design and build your oasis. A spacious stone patio, different levels, maybe a fireplace, flowing water. See their quality work at AllenOutdoorSTL.com, AllenOutdoorSTL.com, or call 314-647-4800, AllenOutdoorSTL.com. This is a scary time when it comes to your money, especially if buying a home. That's why you need Homestead Financial Mortgage. I know the owners, met the team. You can trust Homestead will be with you every step of the way. Call 24/7 with any question or concern. Homestead is on your schedule, not banker's hours. This is not just about buying a home. It's about trust. You can go to my website, larry.homesteadfinancial.com. Larry.homesteadfinancial.com. This time of year, heavy rains, high winds, they can hit. And if you have any loose shingles, even the smallest hole in your roof, you're taking a major gamble with your biggest investment. I can tell you from personal experience, do not wait until you have water where it shouldn't be. Don't forget that John Beale has disaster crews, which can at least cover your roof until the damage can be fully repaired. Homeowner, business owner, call John Beale, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
In the state of New Mexico, they've long had a history of allowing open carry of handguns in most public settings. Open carry. I would tell you that I'm, on one hand, against displaying open carry. One, it might create unnecessary fear. Two, it might invite someone to try to take the gun from you. And what would be the purpose unless you're trying to look like you're someone special? I have an issue with that. Do I believe in concealed carry? Yes. And if I'm in a group that is all open carry, it doesn't bother me and it doesn't bother them. But there's no sense creating an issue if you don't need to. But now the governor of New Mexico, because of a wave of deadly shootings in the Albuquerque, New Mexico area, she says we're having a public health emergency with these shootings. So the governor of New Mexico issued an emergency order suspending the right to carry firearms in Albuquerque and the surrounding county. I don't mean carrying them open. I mean carrying them at all. She basically is throwing away the Second Amendment. Now, the normal suspects would line up to accuse and charge her with trying to do that, and they have. The National Association for Gun Rights and a member who lives in Albuquerque has sued in U.S. District Court, wants an immediate injunction. Her order was implemented on Friday. So far, it's not been granted. One social media post states that the governor is a tyrannical executive order banning firearm carry and adding, see you in court. So you would expect that. She is a Democrat. She's been criticized by New Mexico law enforcement as being a liberal Democrat Congress, or rather actually also a liberal Democrat congressman and a prominent gun control activist has also criticized her. But she adds, as the governor of New York, I think we need it. Well, even California Democrat Congressman Ted Lieu stated, no state in the union can suspend the federal constitution. These are Democrats telling her that. And then you've got the sheriff of the county near outside Albuquerque, he said, the district attorney, that is, I'm making it clear, I will not enforce the ban on concealed carry. He's talking about concealed carry. As an officer of the court, I cannot and will not enforce something that is clearly unconstitutional. Period. Musk, on his Twitter account, X account, stated, at the risk of stating what should be obvious, deliberately violating the Constitution is next level illegal. How soon can this person be removed from office? And then you have another person complaining about what she has done. And this one for some will be a real surprise. If you didn't have surprise by Congressman Ted Lieu of California, Democrat, complaining about it, you recall David Hogg, the student who survived, one of the students who survived the deadly shooting at Florida's Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. He went on to become a leader of the gun control movement. And he wrote, I support gun safety, but there is no such thing as a state public health emergency exception to the U.S. Constitution. Well, I'm glad to see he recognizes that. She is way beyond the constitutional grounds of what she should be able to do. I just checked, and so far there's nothing that has been granted on a temporary restraining order. One, I should give you more on the other side. The co-president of the New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence states, if it saves one life, then it's worth doing. No, I'm sorry, it's not. It's not a matter of taking and destroying the Constitution because it's a conflict with someone else. The Albuquerque mayor, a Democrat, also distancing himself from the governor and said the Albuquerque Police Department will not be responsible for enforcing the order. We'll see where that goes, and I can imagine it's going to be deeper yet. Turning to a couple of other subjects, for one of them, PETA is finding more issues with cows, from causing wildfires to protecting and promoting white supremacy. I know you're rattling around your head, so what? What do cows have to do with wildfires and white supremacy? I'll come to that in a moment. But let me share this with you first. This happened last week. And unless you're in California or you know someone, it might have just escaped your attention. I saw it, but I didn't have time to put it in when I wanted to. The California legislature has approved a bill, official, that would punish parents who do not affirm their child's gender identity. Assembly Bill 957, known as the Transgender, Gender Diverse, and Intersex Youth Empowerment Act, passed the California Assembly Friday by a 57-16 vote. The Senate passed the bill by a 30-9 vote prior to that. The bill, quote, would include a parent's affirmation of the child's gender identity as part of the health, safety, and welfare of that child. Now, if Governor Newsom signs this, it would then require custody judges to establish a parent's affirmation of their child's gender regarding decisions as to who gets the child if there's a divorce, or should the child even stay in custody of either parent. Apparently, as some are interpreting it, threatening the standard of health, safety, and welfare of a child under the California Family Code could also carry penalties, penal codes, prompting parents, activists, and lawmakers to speculate parents could be charged with child abuse or child neglect because Sally, who was born a girl, now wants to say, I'm a boy, and you have to accept I'm a boy. This isn't even really getting into puberty blockers or transgenderism, not the way I've seen of what I see of the bill. It's just that if the child decides that I am an opposite gender of what I was born and how you raised me, you have to do what I want. You're going to let your child tell you what you should be doing, right? Well, that's one step away from the government telling you how to raise your child. Now the child's going to tell you how to raise me. Not going to fly in my house. I know it's not going to fly in a lot of houses. But the sponsor, the assemblywoman who came up with it, she has a transgender son. And she said, as the mother of a transgender son, these issues are critical to me. Okay, I'll accept it critical to you and your son. But enforcing it upon everyone else, penalizing parents because they don't want to accept things that you have accepted. She adds that well-rounded social support from friends and family members is strongly associated with positive mental development, physical health, and overall well-being. That I agree with. I agree fully with that. But simply caving to a child's tantrum or demand that I want more cake, I want this, I want that, and if you don't give it to me, you're abusing me. Reminds me of the time one of my daughters, the oldest one, I will have to admit, was once again in trouble, and I told her, you're going to get a spanking, and you're going to get to go upstairs. She said, well, I'm going to call the child care people. She'd talk to friends, I guess. She said, well, you know, they'll come save you from your dad. Well, I'm not beating her. I am spanking her. I said, well, go on up, and I'll be up. So I came up. I gave her a phone number written down on paper. Said, here's the number. When I finish spanking, you can call. They're going to come take you, and I don't know where you're sleeping tonight, but I'm going to sleep in my bed. Now, you do what you want to do. Of course, you didn't call. The same kind of idiocy is surfacing at Cornell Medical School. They provide a CRT class training students to become woke activists. Thought they're supposed to train them to be medical staff. But the students and staff at this New York-based university are being provided race theory classes as part of the push for, guess what? Diversity, equity, and inclusion. Course material is also including how to tell students to communicate with someone who disagrees with that. The course is not mandatory, but those who do attend will be trained into becoming woke activists and be able to carry that as part of their credentials. So if they can't make it in the medical field, maybe they can become a DEI instructor. This wokeness has got to come to a halt. And you want the latest of it? Oh, I got it. I've got it for you right here, my friend. I'm glad you asked. PETA, known for the protection, ethical treatment of animals, or as some of us like to say, people eat tasty animals, that'd be me, is saying if you're eating beef and cows, you're the reason for wildfires. The cows are the cause, actually, not because of their methane gas and their emissions catching fire and burning up the cow's rear end and the forest nearby, but because land is being cleared so cattle can be grown. But how that translates to actually causing the wildfire? They looked at one report here. They were looking at the largest rainforest on Earth, talking about record-breaking fires for more than 3 weeks. This is a few years ago. And they say we need to address the leading culprit in global deforestation, animal agriculture. They had 9,500 new fires, and they say it all had to do with because raging wildfires, because they're trying to raise cattle. And they're saying that in some cases, cattle ranchers are starting the illegal fires to make room for more animals. Well, are the cows doing it, or those who are raising it? The cattle. But the bottom line is they don't want you to eat meat. So you got cows, you have sheep, you have goat. In this country, we don't eat horse, but in some countries they do. Not to mention cats and dogs. And I'm a lover of all those animals, but God put them there for us to sustain us. If you don't want to eat meat, that's your choice. But why you want to force someone else not to? Or eat fish? You don't want to do that. Again, your choice. That's fine. But they have another issue with cattle, in particular dairy cattle. PETA says milk is a perfect drink for white supremacists. They look at if you saw Inglourious Basterds, the guy that played Christopher Waltz, who played the general who was intent on finding and killing Jews, he drinks a glass of milk and sips it, and then they say that's embracing white supremacy. So they're now alarmed that white nationalists are using milk images and sharing photos of themselves drinking milk to celebrate their whiteness. I don't know what they're doing or not. They can do whatever they want, but that doesn't, to me, have that same connection. But they make that connection. And they also said they found genetic mutation that allows some humans to digest milk. That also occurs in black African cattle farmers. And all we can say, they say, is that human supremacists need to start thinking about other special interests. Well, there are a lot of people that are lactose intolerant, regardless of their race. But when they want to now say that cows are being pumped for their milk, and it's a white supremacy thing, then that's where they say the cows have no choice what's being done to them. They're being milked. Well, if it's a dairy cow, they're going to have to be milked, or they're going to have a real serious health issue. And then I'm not going to get into the whole cattle raising operation, dairy cattle, but all I think about when I see this kind of stuff, again, someone flailing away trying to find something else to make people divided. I have a question about maybe where I stand. I'm a white man. I used to drink a lot of white milk, but I really like chocolate milk. Now what am I? Now what am I? And it doesn't come from chocolate cows. You do know that, right? As always, thanks for listening. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.